the first thing we can do is start by helping ourselves. So, you know, it's great to have ambition to change industry and to change, you know, the company's policies and things like that. But I guess our expectations with ourselves, how we operate, our understanding of how we operate as well, you know, I think one thing that you could do straight away that won't cost you any money is really build the understanding of between mental health and mental illness. So mental health we have day to day, hour to hour. It's not going away just like our physical health, and we need to maintain our mental health to access flow, to access that most creative part of ourselves, to really enjoy our creative process.
Welcome to Songwriter Tryst 2024. I'm Ray Lee, and this is an intimate podcast that is connecting songwriters from all over the world. Today, we have a bonus interview with the Haymate Project. So we're going to be talking about all things mental health and how it's impacted in all creative industries, but in specific, the music industry and how it impacts us as songwriters and what we can do as songwriters to make sure that our mental health is good and the people around us as well are doing all right. Music saved my life, and through these conversations, I'm discovering that I'm not the only one. This is a totally safe space to share stories, lessons, and emotions, and all the great things that build an amazing song. If you're a songwriter and you want to connect into this community, get our newsletters, join the Facebook group, or even come to some events, then please check out the website songwritertryst.com. Our sponsor for this episode is all the way from New Zealand, our Australian neighbour, Lands Care. Now, they are doing an incredible job saving the soil and working with farmers in the community to create sustainability. So if you have any interest in farming and helping the environment and maintaining healthy soil for sustainability for the future, and you're in New Zealand and you want to get connected with these guys, go to landscarenz.co.nz, and all the details for them will be in the description of this podcast. Thank you so much for sponsoring the show. We really appreciate them supporting local artists and this show that's helping not just people in Australia or New Zealand, but we've got UK and America and like everyone, no matter where you're listening from. We really appreciate you and we really, really value all support. If you are a business who would like to sponsor our website or our podcast and what we're doing, please get in contact with us through the website. Now let's get into a mental health chat for creatives with the Haymate Project. Welcome to a special episode of Songwriter Tryst. We are here with Amy Davies, and we're going to talk about the Haymate Project, and I'm going to let you, Amy, do all the introductions. First off, though, tell us a little bit about who you are and where you come from.
Sure. So my name is Amy Davies, and I come from Brisbane.
Whereabouts in Brisbane? Let's get specific because we're close. So
I'm a North Brizzy girl, so I'm based in Sandgate, So Turrbal and Yuggera country, which is really beautiful, and we're by the water there, which is, you know, lovely for Brisbane beaches, which, on the scale of, I feel like Australian beaches, not that good, but nice nonetheless.
That's okay. We won't judge you for your beaches. All right, so why don't you tell me about the Haymate Project? Let's start with what it is and then we'll go into a little bit about the background of how you got into it and where it all comes from. So what is the Haymate Project?
That's the ever-evolving question, to be honest. The Haymate Project, so we're a social enterprise and we are a mental health and wellbeing organisation that delivers support and education to the creative industries in a jazzy form. So we are a mental health org that specialises in supporting those in the creative industries, and all of our team have creative industry experience as well. So it's sort of made by, created for, delivered by creatives.
Yeah, wow. So it's very broad and it's very much needed. Maybe let's go back to the beginning. What's your story? How did you end up here right now?
It's a little bit like how long is a piece of string, but yeah. I guess in a nutshell, I was always in the creative industries or in the arts. So I was put into ballet dance classes when I was four because I skipped on one leg, which essentially means I hopped. And then from there, it was me and I was them and I just sort of went from one creative industry to another. So I danced from the ages of 4 to 21. I did drama. I did music. And it was my safe space. It was my happy place. I wasn't really an athletic person. And it's something that I stuck with after school and did well. I was supposed to do a performing arts degree and then realized I had to audition, so I didn't. And then I was like, I'll do a music course. And I had to audition, and then so I didn't. And then my cousin's dad is a lighting designer and did lighting for Jimmy Barnes. And so as a 18-year-old, that was very cool. I was like, I could do that. I could do like lighting or sound, and, you know, you just press the buttons and you don't have to do anything creative or put yourself out there or, you know, now what I know, be afraid of rejection. But then once you study sound, you realize that it's a whole lot more than pressing buttons and just making it happen. You know, you're really nurturing people's bodies of work, and it's really creative, collaborative, and at times intimate process. So so I studied sound and audio, and this was in the really early 2010s, and it's not what the industry looks like now a lot. You know, it was a lot older industry, primarily male dominated. So as a young, very naive adult, it probably wasn't the right place for me at that time. So then I went back, did the original plan, studied performing arts, and went from performing arts into media and communications because I thought I needed to get a real job, and sort of did, you know, jack of all trades, master of none, did the full-time jobs, did the contract roles, did my own freelance stuff at a creative studio for a while as well. And essentially in the midst of this, someone very close to me had a very rapid and aggressive mental illness come on. And my mum is a nurse, a clinical nurse. She's a very smart, educated woman, and she's always been very upfront with physical health, you know, particularly as a dancer, mental health, how that sort of all moves in together. So I thought I had a pretty good awareness of what mental health was and mental illness. And once it comes in to someone very close to you, I realized I had no idea. Yeah. I had no idea. And also the impact it has on the people that are closest to that said individual as well, which we don't really talk about a lot. You know, we talk about individual care, but also the care of those caring for that said individual. So that was sort of the trajectory that caused me to move into the sort of clinical space. So I got a job as a therapy assistant working for an organization called Act for Kids, which is this amazing charity.
Support them whenever we can.
Oh, good. The work that they do, the impact. I've never had a job, obviously, besides the work that I do now, that has been so challenging, but like you can physically see the impact you're making daily. So I worked for them for about 3 years. I studied counseling. And then I guess during that time I really started to see the correlation between, you know, the creative industries, primarily performing arts, music base, and then also I guess the psychosocial hazards and how we support those, whereas in a clinical workplace, you know, the psychosocial hazards and supporting well-being is one of the things you have to do to maintain your registration as a clinician, let alone like a workplace initiative. And so to sort of see one end and then the arts at that time being a completely other end, I think once you see that, you really can't sort of unsee it. So at the end of 2019, the funding for my role changed. So it changed into a role that I couldn't give full-time capacity to, so I decided to step away from my role at ACFA Kids and wanted to use my creative skills, my clinical skills, and combine them. But we're talking late 2019, so we're talking Arts Wellbeing Collective is in their pilot phase, so we don't know how long it's going to be around for. We're talking pre-COVID, so Support Act, you know, their budgets, funding, things like that, were definitely not what they are now to the strength of the impact that their work is currently doing. So also being based in Queensland, very limited compared to our southern states. So I looked overseas to the UK and the US, and there were a few initiatives, organisations that were starting, very grassroots. One of them was an initiative called Live Live, which is an initiative that Lewis Capaldi did at his sort of first arena tour, which actually sold out prior to him releasing his first album, which is unheard of in, wow, in its own right. I know. And so this initiative was providing safe spaces, social and emotional support at live gigs, in collaboration with a guy called Jack Williamson, who is a psychotherapist and a fantastic clinician, but also had worked in the music industry for 20 years. So I reached out to Jack and wanted to learn more about this initiative as someone who has anxiety. One of the first things that went for me was going to live gigs, and so I really resonated with it. And Jack was so kind enough to write back, which, you know, you're not sure if people will, particularly when you're inquiring about the actual work that they do. And anyway, it turned into, you know, Jack is one of my mentors and someone that is so kindly accessible to me and teammate, and was, I guess, the antithesis of if you can't find it, build it. So Haymate was born. And so we thanks. It's a part that I don't really mention too much because I don't know. I feel like people like the neat side of it. whereas there's so much more than that. You know, I think I didn't just decide to start a mental health organisation to, like, I don't know, have look my cool. own org or something. look cool. The plan wasn't to be here. I mean, I don't know what the plan was, but the plan wasn't to be here in this role to this breadth, I guess, of services and support that Haymate does. So we started... Sorry, it goes dark. You can still see me. It's okay. We started with the intent of doing social and emotional support at live events because that's my baby. That's what I love. COVID then hit. So, no live events. All that work that we'd done for 6 months, you know, blew up in front of our faces overnight, myself and a psychologist friend, and we sort of put it on pause for a month. And then we're like, well, you know, we're counsellors and psychologists and we're in the arts, so they need that more than ever now. So we started offering individual support for community, community workshops, things like that, sort of the real base level of what we deliver now. And it got to the point where arts bodies are like, hey, you do counselling and you're in the arts, can we sort of partner up and can you do workplace stuff for us? And that really led into us developing our workplace wellbeing programs and EAP support, things like that. And so, longer story made short, we're now, you know, nationwide. So we service all across Australia. We service New Zealand. We're now, clients are in New Zealand when they're touring in the States and the UK as well. And we are Australia's only, I guess, self-sustained social initiative that does deliver the breadth of the creative industries, from music, performing arts, screen and television, marketing, media, even sound and lighting. You know, I was talking to one of our clients today and they do all the sound and lighting for all the massive events across Australia. So, it's sort of grown into its little behemoth, but that's so I guess, cool. it, in a nutshell, how Haymate was started.
Yeah. And so what does that look like for a client who is in the creative industries who reaches out to you? Why would they reach out to you, and then how would you integrate into their what they're doing?
Yeah, that's a great question. So how they would get involved with HeyMate, so we are self-referred, or if they are working with a clinician or an organisation that knows of us, they can be referred as well, or through their workplace if we're a partner with their workplace. Mm-hmm. But I guess how we differ from like a going to your GP or seeing a private counsellor that perhaps isn't industry specific is we have an intake process that is in-depth. So it's about 10 to 15 minutes chat with a clinician. And what they do is they get to know you as an individual, who you are, your creative background, any presenting issues, any preferences on therapeutic practice. So if you prefer, you know, a counsellor, or you've worked with a psychologist and you don't want to work with a psychologist, or, you know, you're interested in art therapy or music therapy, you know, we can cater to all of those. Mm. And then we look at you as an individual as well. So, you know, how do you identify? Do we have someone that can support you with that? Are you a person of colour, First Nations, LGBTQI+, or do you require someone that has cultural competency? So all those sorts of things, we then look at the team, which I'm really happy to say I think displays so much diversity that it's a pretty accurate representation of the industry in which we serve today, which is really important at the forefront of what we do, having people that look like, identify like, have industry experience like the people we're serving. Mm-hmm. And then we support them however they need. So if they need phone support, if they need telehealth or Zoom conversations and support, we can do that, or we can create a treatment plan. As an individual, if we're looking at more of a producer role or someone who is perhaps coordinating a tour, things like that, and want to put sort of smaller workplace or safety's in, you know, we look at the tour, we look at the dates, what are some things that we can put in place that are there in case, so that they don't have to separate with income straight away, or is there a budget? You know, how can we create that? So I guess we do things from individual wellbeing plans and counselling and support for freelancers right up to wellbeing programs to some of our country's largest arts bodies. So
cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like mental health insurance for creative industry businesses.
Yeah,
which is important, especially in the creative arts.
I guess, you know, yes, it is an insurance, because when we are down, when we have a crisis or something happen, we're not in the place to be looking and researching and having these conversations. It's really about those preventative, proactive measures that make the most you know, impact, I guess, on our community, but also feeling like people can go to work and they feel safe, or they feel supported, or they know that if they're having a really bad week, that there's this safety net there for them to call upon if and when required, which, you know, prior to COVID was quite limited, depending on the industry within the creative sectors that you're in, and also having someone that is understanding of the trials and tribulations of your chosen occupation. You know, it's not, oh, you make music, I should be happy all the time, you know, I wish I could make music. Or you know, performers, too regularly do people go to services which perhaps aren't understanding of the psychosocial hazards of their workplace, and the fact that, you know, they get to dress up for a living and then think, oh, well, you know, what's your actual problem? You don't have real problems, do you? Or they're seen as their occupation, not as a human, which I think as artists we have the hardest time separating that, let alone having to explain that to other people.
Mm. Well, it's such an emotional thing to be creative. You do put so much of your heart and soul into it. It's not just academics. And so it can be hard with you dealing with rejection. It's not rejection of your mind, it's rejection of your heart and soul. And that can be really challenging. Have you noticed with, you know, the work that you're doing without obviously specifically divulging anything, a common theme that you find the creative industry struggles with more so than maybe just the general public?
Yeah. That's a great question. But I guess, you know, statistically, our industries, we're four times more likely to have levels of anxiety and depression, right? Like levels of not feeling safe at workplaces statistically are higher. So there's definitely the evidence base to be able to refer back to that. But I guess what we see in presentations or in our workshops and conversations, definitely the separation of the creative person and the artist, and making sure that we take care of, you know, ourselves in order to take care of our art. Like, rest isn't the reward for working. Rest is actually part of our work, our life. Burnout is a massive thing because we're not putting in sustainable work practices. Unfortunately, there is still that hustle mentality, or you've got to be doing all these things to achieve this, which I think, yes, you need to work hard to have a sustainable career, but you also need to be able to roll out that work plan in a sustainable way, because if you burn out, you get creative block, you're unable to do your work, you're unable to work, right? So when we have these opportunities that we strive for, we want to make sure that we're the most sustainable, healthy, happy version of ourselves that we can be, given the psychosocial hazards of the industry and the occupation that we choose. And then I guess the other thing is, and you touched on this briefly before, would be the fact that no matter if you spend 3 hours on a project or 3 years, you know, at the end of the day, once we put it out, depending on your occupation, but as an artist, a musician, a performer, the value of that work is external. So we don't know what that value is going to be until we put it out and how it's going to be received. So that stress while we're creating it, the stress while we're putting it out, and then the stress on how we manage that and reconcile that and then go back into that cycle all over again is something that we really need to, I guess, focus on and support ourselves through, and really have an understanding that we have no control over the perceived value of certain works that we do if we choose that as an occupation. So they're probably the most common across the sort of creative industries, but also something that is, you know, whether you're a filmmaker, a musician, a performing artist, a writer, it's like we all experience it.
There is, like, and there's been, you know, a lot of strikes with SAG and all that sort of stuff, and there's been since COVID, I think, a little bit more awareness around maybe the lack of value that the arts industry is given from society in general. And that can go from how much you get paid as a creative worker in a corporate setting, or, you know, buskers or whatever it is. Do you find that is something that potentially could have a correlation to the mental health of the creative arts, like artists, people who are out there doing this work and feeling undervalued, self-worth, things like that? Do you think that that's something that comes up a lot? Or do you think actually it's only a few people and it's probably got nothing to do with social stuff? I don't know. You'd see a lot more of it than I would.
No, I think and that's so interesting that you point that out, right, that in our community we don't really see it, but we know it's there, because as artists we can't really show that vulnerable, at times potentially struggling or going through hardships, because we don't want to miss out on that gig or be seen as incompetent, or, you know, if you're not built for it, then it's you, not the industry, all those sorts of old wives' tales. But, yeah, absolutely. You know, there are studies that have been done over the last 5 years that all have come back saying that there's a certain level of financial hardship that arts workers experience, whether that be going from contract to contract or the uncertainty of work, you know. I know too many performers that will save so much because they're unsure where their next paycheck's going to come from or their next opportunity. Yeah. There's really only a certain level you get to, pending, you know, what avenue you want to go within the industry, that there is that level of financial security and you're not chasing that next gig or wondering where your next paycheck's coming from or reconciling that day job, night job, all those sorts of things as well. So, yeah, financial hardship is absolutely something that is quite prevalent. I guess it really comes down to finding opportunity to create that stability for yourself, whether that be through a particular artistic practice or also reconciling that with perhaps part-time work at an arts organisation to cover your bills.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not rocket science. I mean, it's not just artists, is it? It's everyone. When someone does a job and they get paid well for it, they'll boast about it. They're walking higher and taller and they've got a smile in their face. And then, you know, when they do a job that they don't feel like they're being paid accurately for, they slump and they're miserable and they feel like they're being undervalued. And whether that's an arts job or whether it's any job, I think we all do get impacted by what our worth is and what we believe our worth is, whether it's reasonable or not. Like, that's something completely different. That's a self thing. But it is a hard thing. I think that it's not necessarily a creative way of thinking, it's a business way of thinking. And if you're not that way inclined and you are an artist, I find it challenging. And a lot of people I speak to on this podcast, I think we don't talk about the money aspect of our value and what we do, because obviously we value what we do, otherwise we wouldn't be doing it. It's valuable to us, but maybe it's not as valuable to other people, and it's about finding that middle ground and then working on the mental health, like you said. Something did come up for me that I saw in the bio a little bit around complex trauma and things like that. Is that complex trauma is something that, I mean, and you're welcome to explain it. We haven't got huge amounts of time. So complex, like PTSD, is for people who have had trauma and then not really had it dealt with for long periods of time, and then there's extra side effects based on it. Is that something that you find more so in creative industries, or is it just something because it's for more of a newly accepted sort of condition?
Yeah. So I guess with trauma, there's a few different types of trauma, right? So we can have simple trauma, which is a one-off traumatic event. We could be in a car crash, you know, someone could run up our bumper on the way home and it's uncomfortable and takes a while for us to get over and process and heal from. Versus complex trauma is something that we are exposed to over a longer period of time, a lot of the time. So that could be an unsafe environment as a child or an unsafe person in our lives. It could be levels of abuse. It could be, you know, alcohol abuse, drug abuse, unsafe work environments, these sorts of things that create different levels of complex trauma. You know, complex trauma is something that is diagnosed but also agreed upon with clinicians. So it's something that we probably shouldn't label ourselves with. But I guess with complex trauma, it really requires an ongoing amount of therapeutic support, whether that be through working with a psychologist or making lifestyle changes as well to support that, and looking at our safeguards within our artistic practice, you know, how we decide to live and how we decide to tour and all these sorts of things. So complex trauma is, I think, probably on the rise as far as diagnosis. You know, now we know a lot more than what we did a decade ago. And absolutely, it's in our community, you know, it's in our creative industries community, it's in general community. It may not always look like what we think it will, but it is something that, you know, to live a happy, healthy, fruitful life and to access that creative part of ourselves where we can get into flow and really be reflective, we really need support. And we need to also make sure that those that are in our nearest and dearest circle, both professionally and personally, have understandings of why we make changes and why we need support in certain areas and do things so we have a better outcome at the end of the day.
I'm asking because it's something that I'm passionate about. I had 8 years of child sexual abuse, went through the court case, and I've had over 10 years of therapy. And it took me a long time to realize that I need the support. I have to open up to other people around me. I have to trust other people. And it is continuous. It's been continuous for many, many years, over 11 years. I have an 11-year-old son. He's my oldest. And that was when I started getting therapy. And it's I find it really interesting. And when I see lack of awareness and I see it sort of not being understood, I do find it heartbreaking. And so I love it that society is becoming more and more aware of it and supporting it. But also, like you said, understanding that, like, the impact I had on the people that, like, my husband and my kids and my family and those around me when I was in my really lows, it's just such an essential part of life and it's needed. And sometimes those people can become traumatized by, you know, having to deal and live with someone who is going through their trauma and their healing as well. And it's just such a roller coaster of a life with mental health. And I think it's so beautiful when I meet people who have the compassion and grace and capacity to not only actually face it and not hide away from it, because it is conflict and most people avoid conflict. It is conflict within oneself and with other people, and it can be really challenging. But it takes a really strong person to sort of deal with it and to see you guys coming together and providing an answer for an industry that was probably screaming for it for a very long time is so beautiful. I also saw you've got your own podcast. We should definitely give that a plug for anyone who wants looking for a new podcast. And you've got a Q Music partnership at the moment. I'd love to know if that impacts Q Music members or what that's about. And also, we've talked about sort of the industry and corporate stuff, but can independent artists like myself or individuals who are sole traders reach out to you, and how do you support them in that way?
Well, let's start with the Q Music one, I guess, because that's one that's sort of front of mind. So that's kudos for you for spotting that, because that, I think, popped up last night. So, so we are talking about workplace wellbeing, EAPs, partnerships, things like that. So we have recently partnered with Q Music to be their EAP, so for their internal team, which is very important and a huge win, I guess, for Haymate and also the industry in putting in that sort of industry-specific support. I'm sorry to say that, you know, we've been around for almost 5 years and, you know, when I started Haymate, I started the intent of providing safe spaces, right, for whether that be live gigs or festivals, things like that. Music is sort of the side of my work that I really love doing. Yeah, so the music industry is an industry that I love, and it's the area that I started Haymate with the intent of improving and making happier and healthier. And it's also the industry that's been most challenging from an individual point of view, but also from an organisational point of view and an industry point of view. So the fact that we are partnering with a peak body for the state of Queensland, which is our home state, but also, you know, one of the most influential holding gigs like Big Sound, is really exciting for us. And I hope it's the start of, you know, more impact and more things happening potentially at their live events throughout the year, but we will have to stay tuned and see what that looks like.
It's interesting because I am in a few different creative industries as well, and I find the same. It's like the other arts stuff that I do keeps me doing my music, but like, if the music fell away, I'd be financially better off. I'd probably be mentally better off. I don't know about the mental, but it is. It's like it seems to be. What I've noticed is it doesn't seem to be as connected as much as we have APRA in Australia and Q Music, and I still find that those, even though they're international, like they cover all of Australia, I still find them really segregated and really small and individual and not inclusive and diverse, not with race and sexuality or any of that stuff. That's always usually, you know, highlighted and ticked the box. But as far as musical tastes and styles and it seems to still be very segregated, and because of that, like because we all have different tastes, which is fine, I find that we, you know, it's competitive and we're biting at each other rather than working together. You know, for experience for me in the film industry, it's so like polar opposite. Like we have to work together to create something amazing, and everyone supports each other, and they want to give the other person a leg up. And I don't know, it's so weird because you'd think one's film and one's music and like they kind of overlap in some areas, but in other areas they obviously don't. But they're just as a creative person in that area, what is it like? Why is it music so far behind these other creative areas?
Oh, I think if I knew the answer, I would be
solving it.
I'd be very well off, yeah, and solving it. You know, I'm
I think it's
sure.
A mental health. I think you are solving it.
Yeah, maybe, perhaps. yeah, you know, I think because the music industry, you know, it's bloody hard work. It's a hard slog to get anywhere, right? And when you get to a certain aspect or a certain point within your career, I'm finding people are very protective of what they've established and to question how, what, where, why, you know, can we improve or is there room for exploring new initiatives or partnering or, you know, bettering. It's a little bit behind, and it is, you know, it is behind, particularly compared to like our overseas counterparts of the US and the UK. You know, I had the well-being manager basically of a peak body over in the UK come out, and they spent 3 months here researching what we have available here as far as well-being across all of our industries. And the thing that they said was that it's very segregated, and there's not that sort of inclusivity or link chain, I think, that a lot of them have, you know, in the UK and US. If you go and find any sort of initiative in music in the UK or the US, you will see that they will have other organisations or you know, venues, things like that, all interlinked. I find unless you have one person that sees value in what you do, which all it does take is one person, it took us almost 5 years to find that person in that organisation. It's really challenging, but I guess you just got to keep knocking on doors and trying to find those right people. But also with that being said, you know, follow my words a little bit, because the people that are in the music industry and that are open to collaboration or that are open to creating safe spaces and safe workplaces and safe community are brilliant, you know, and they're the first people that will sort of bring you in. Like, and Ray, you probably know them, like Listen Up Music. So Ali Taylor is fantastic and such an advocate for the industry and an advocate for the work that we do. And even communities like the Real Songwriters of Melbourne, I find that they're, you know, those places that are inclusive will hopefully really support you. But yeah, I find we've got a long way to go. We've obviously made quite a lot of effort and a lot of change in the last 4 or 5 years, you know, to have mental health conversations and the guys like Support Act having programming opportunities at Big Sound and also South by Southwest in Sydney is huge, right?
Awesome.
Like, yeah, that wouldn't have been heard of 5 years ago. So, so we've got a long way to go, but I'm hoping we're a little bit more receptive. But it does come from the top and it does come from modelling. So, you know, we really do need those sort of organisational leaders and people that do call the shots to really start to see that value and that change. And I think we're also a workplace or an industry that is or has changed over the last 4 or 5 years. You know, there's been a lot of exodus and a lot of newcomers as well, and the newcomers have seen the challenges that the industry has and a lot more vocal and happy to advocate in their workplace but also for themselves as well, which is definitely what we need more of.
Yeah, I think there's been, like, as a female artist in the music industry, which is a whole nother conversation, even just having the reports and things that have been done has given a voice and maybe created a slightly safer industry for people to feel like they're going to be heard and maybe not dismissed or blacklisted as quickly as maybe once thought. So it's slowly getting there, slowly. And but like you said, it does come from the top down, and I think they're doing what they can, and everyone's treading on eggshells. But I think everyone wants to do the right thing. It's just trying to work out, well, what is the right thing? If we've been getting it wrong for so long, you know, what can we do to make it better? And that's probably the big question, isn't it? What do you recommend to the listeners, artists out there, songwriters in the music industry, because we are a songwriting podcast? What can you recommend to those people? Like, how can they be a part of the change and support within the creative industry?
The first thing we can do is start by helping ourselves. So, you know, it's great to have ambition to change industry and to change, you know, the company's policies and things like that. But I guess our expectations with ourselves, how we operate, our understanding of how we operate as well, you know, I think one thing that you could do straight away that won't cost you any money is really build the understanding of between mental health and mental illness. So mental health we have day to day, hour to hour. It's not going away just like our physical health, and we need to maintain our mental health to access flow, to access that most creative part of ourselves, to really enjoy our creative process. You know, you're not looking after your mental health just to avoid getting a mental illness, it's also for long-term sustainability. So looking at that, but I would say advocating and setting a really healthy routine, whether that be how you songwrite, how you allow yourself to be creative, how you manage your work-life commitments, and also if you are touring or have expectations of performing, you know, how are you doing that? Are you doing that in a sustainable and healthy way? Because there are healthy ways and there are also unsustainable and unhealthy ways.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've sort of looked inside, done an audit, and you are happy with what you see and what you planned for yourself, then I would say start advocating externally, or really support those advocates, individuals, organizations, community groups that do that heavy lifting and that do support, because like we said, it comes from the top. So making sure that we're asking for, you know, a safe workplace and to make sure that we can also do our job the best way possible. So we want to be able to enjoy the time before the gig on stage and also after the gig. They don't need to be times of despair or of stress or of, you know, overwhelming anxious nerves. So it can all be mitigated and supported in different capacities. I would say internal, once you're sort of happy with that, looking external and how you can support as well. And you can do it, you know, without costing you money and maybe just a little bit of your time as well.
I love that. And I'm going to ask, this is probably a really weird question, but you did say that, you know, the auditions to get into music college and stuff was really the thing that turned you off. So there's a bit of fear of rejection there. Do you think if the colleges supplied and provided that safe space with, say, the Haymate Project was there before and after your auditions and was, you know, was there to support you in that process, do you feel like that would have made a difference to your considering of actually doing it versus not doing it at all?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think even before having that support is having the understanding, right? Like, I think if I had known what I know now as far as nerves and feeling inadequate and these sorts of things, it's not because I wasn't good enough. You know, and I might have bombed the auditions, who knows, but
we'll never know.
You know, we'll never know. And
that's the sad part.
And that's what I've got to live with, but that's okay. but it is more understanding how we work, and that these feelings are completely normal. And even the artists, like we were touching on before, that are upbeat and professional or appear like they've got it all together,
mm-hmm.
I bet my house that they don't inside all the time. You know, we are all human. So, but yes, I think building education around how we work as creatives, what we can expect, ways and strategies to mitigate things like nerves, you know, even that would have helped incredibly. And then also putting in supports absolutely into our tertiary educations, even if you've got, you know, course to include it is really important, really base level stuff. But yeah, I think education and mitigating, and also putting those safety things in place, like having Hey Mate there, or the guys from Support Act or the guys from Listen Up Music, anything like that, just someone so you know that there's someone there who is advocating for the better, and creating that safe space would be so influential, absolutely.
I love that. And not don't get yourself down for not, I never did the audition. I didn't sing till I was 31 in public outside of church. So, you know, I am all for that fear of the rejection of the heart and soul, and I totally get it. And it is education. And the best thing we can do is, you know, listening to podcasts. Like what's your podcast name, by the way?
Yes. So our podcast, which we did during COVID, which we're actually in the process of redoing. So this comes at fantastic time. Yeah. so it's called the Feel Good Feeling Podcast, which don't ask me why I called it that. I'm not exactly sure. I guess because we would like to leave having a good feeling at the end of it. But it's just me talking to musicians. So we've got the fabulous Zach Eichner on there. We have Hayden Evans, who is the owner and founder of Let's Go Support Services, which provides accessibility and support for people with disabilities at live events and particularly festivals and musical events. So that's a wonderful chat. We've got Jody, who's a wonderful artist from the States. And we also have Caitlin, and Caitlin is a performance coach and also an opera singer. So absolutely worth checking out. Yeah, fantastic conversations, and I'm really looking forward to bringing them back in 2024. So,
hey, well, yeah, I think doing that sort of stuff and continuing to, like you said, work on ourselves and our own mental health, and then supporting others when we can. Yeah, it's a really good message, and I really appreciate the work that you're doing, and I'm really glad to be able to support you and help you out any way we can. And I hope that people can go and they can follow you on Instagram and all your socials, and you've got a website that people can, like, is that the best way for people to contact you or get in touch if they want to find out more?
Yes, yeah, the website, thehaymateproject.com or the Haymate Project. On all the socials, you'll be able to find us, and we love a chat, so feel free to drop us a line.
Cool. Well, I'll put all those links into the description of the podcast and the blog and all that sort of stuff. And, thank you so much, Amy. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we finish up?
No, it's been great. I just thank you so much for having me, and also for sharing your story and advocating and doing the work that you do. It's fantastic for the community, and, I'm glad to be a part of it.
Thanks for joining our songwriter Trist today. To join the family and keep up to date with future podcasts, you can follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Please leave a review and subscribe. To support the podcast or contact me or our guests, please go to the website songwritertrists.com. The crowd, no one